Chapter 15. Adamantua. Like stooping raptors, pinions swept back for the long dive, the storm birds plunged into the swirling atmospheric halo surrounding stricken Adamantua. The planet was swathed by a bright, visible corona of agitated energy, a sensor-opaque aura that shrouded the orb to almost the depth of its own radius. It resembled a solar storm, a swirling, luminous ocean of gas, dust, and radiation that flickered in blues, golds, ambers, and reds. The planet itself was just a dark globe, silhouetted within the maelstrom. Just as the Wall brothers had been drawn out of traditional service and allowed to roam away from Terra, so the Stormbird war machines, the fastest and most honored of all the dropcraft in the arsenal of the Adeptus Astartes, had been selected for the reinforcement mission. Stormbirds, sleek, powerful, and large capacity, had been born in the earliest years of the Great Crusade, developed from the almost mythical Skylance dropships that had served during the final days of the Unification Wars, splitting open the hives of Cylonia and Ind. Stormbirds had been the interorbital weapon of choice throughout the Crusade, and through the dark, treacherous time that had been the unexpected sequel to that bright glory. The heresy had consumed them in great numbers, however, just as it had consumed men and brothers and legions, and the forces of the Imperium had been obliged to resort to more utilitarian vehicles that were cheaper and easier to mass-produce. These replacement craft were now ubiquitous in all chapters and had proved worthy of service through their simple functionality and durability. Still, for those with long memories, there was nothing like a Stormbird to stir the heart. The symbol of the Emperor's wrath, wings hooked back like an aquila. One only saw them in ceremonial flypasts these days, or in the Hall of Weapons, or as escorts for High Lords, War Masters, and Sector Governors. Daylight had ordered six of them to be raised from the Fists Chapter House hangars and stowed aboard the reinforcement fleet. No one had argued. Heth's presence on the campaign mission had helped. He was a High Lord, after all. Firing from the capital ships like missiles, the Stormbirds formed a formation spread and scream-dived into the unholy vortex surrounding the planet. Adamantua lay beneath them, a vast curve of grey mottled with orange and crackled with veins of fire. Cloud banks and storm patterns of vast magnitude curdled and swirled across the boiling surface. Magnetics, radiation, and the pop of gravity blisters rendered the near-space realm a lethal soup. "We have substantial volcanism around the equatorial belt," reported the lead Stormbird's tech adept. "The crust there is faulting and splitting." The Stormbird was shaking. Daylight keyed up the data on his overhead monitor and swung it down on its gimbal arm. On the flickering pict, strung with overlays, the planet seemed to have a burning, white-hot girdle around its waist. "Something's happening to the magnetic poles," said the adept. "The planet is deforming. I..." His voice cut out briefly as another noise burst ripped through the vox links, squalling and deafening. The screech was painful, but Daylight's ears could endure it. He had a concern for the human component of his task force, however. The unmodified, unaugmented humans of the Imperial Guard formed the greatest proportion of its strike force. They would suffer, either through mortal injury from the noise bursts, or through lack of coordination if Voxcom proved unviable. What were the implications if he was unable to deploy any of his guard strength to the surface? Could the Wall brothers complete the mission unassisted? Could they find and rescue the Shield Corps? Rescue was a word he certainly did not like. The Stormbirds began to shake more furiously as they entered the outer radiation bands of the high atmosphere. Plumes of what looked like flame flashed past the small, semi-shuttered cabin ports. The tongues were blue, mauve, and green, like noxious gases burning in a lab. For a moment, Daylight wondered if they were some trace of the warp, some demonic lightning. All along there had been quiet rumours that the silent hand of Chaos, whose actions had been absent from the galactic theatre for a troublingly long time, might be playing a part in the Adamantuan misadventure. But it was not false fire or warp scald. It was a geomagnetic display, auroras of charged particles ripping through the maddened thermosphere.
Any indication of vessels in near space?
Asked Daylight.
Negative, replied the tech adept.
Another hope dashed. There was a fleet here, somewhere, the best part of the entire Imperial Fist's battle fleet, unless it had been utterly reduced and annihilated already. Where was it? It could be directly in front of them, but veiled from them by the tumult. The descent turbulence became progressively worse. The Stormbird was shaking like a sistrum at a fervent ritual. Lines of red alert lights were flashing into life along the pilot's enclosing consoles, filling entire rows. Deftly, with great calm, the pilot took one black leather-gloved hand off the helm and muted the alarms. Daylight began to flick through the meager and imperfect surface scan readings they were finally obtaining as they got closer and their AuSpec systems penetrated the atmosphere a little more deeply. They were on a pre-selected dive towards the location of the blister nest, working on the tactical assumption that the site was the last place their forces had been reported. But there was no clear sign of the structure, and little of the surrounding landmass matched, in relief or topographical schemata form at least, the geography logged by the survey teams that had accompanied the original assault.
Is this just bad luck?
Asked Zarathustra. Daylight turned and looked at the wall brother strapped in beside him. Zarathustra's war spear was mounted like a harpoon on the weapon rack above his grim-helmed head. He was the oldest of all the wall brothers and had been the most reluctant to abandon the old tradition and leave the walls of the palace behind.
Bad luck, replied Daylight.
He noted that Zarathustra had selected the discretion of a helm-to-helm link. There were other wall brothers in the craft alongside them. Not to mention 40 atmospherically armoured shock troops of the Astra Militarum Asmodai 70th, Heth's finest. The guardsmen and their leader, Major Nyman, seemed to Daylight to be about the finest and most resolute warriors that unmodified human flesh could compose. But he did not want them overhearing dissent from an Adeptus Astartes warrior as they fell headlong into Hades. Through the dark and slightly breath-fogged visor lenses of their faceplates, he could see pale, drawn, anxious faces that winced at every violent buck and lurch the Stormbird threw.
Bad luck happens even to good men, Daylight, said Zarathustra,
his voice chopped and frayed by the interference patterns even on the short-range dedicated link.
Sometimes the forces of light prevail. Sometimes the forces of darkness take the upper hand. Sometimes, as history teaches us, fate itself intervenes.
He turned his impassive visor to look directly at Daylight. There was a gouge of raw metal across the otherwise perfectly polished faceplate, a gouge that had been left by the blade of one of the sons of Horus during the fight at Zarathustra Wall. Heresy wounds were never patched, though the brother who had taken that stroke no longer dwelt inside the armor.
Think of Cold Blood and his wall at Orphan Mons, said Zarathustra. They took that day against the Eldar raiders full of glory. Then the star went Nova and took Cold Blood, his wall, and the surviving Eldar. Victor and defeated alike, leveled by the whim of the conscienceless cosmos. They say the Eldar Corsairs engineered that stellar bomb to effect a Pyrrhic victory, said Daylight. They say. Don't spoil my story, grumbled Zarathustra. My point is sound. Sometimes you kill the enemy, sometimes the enemy kills you, and sometimes the universe kills you both. This may have been a very conventional fight against these xenoforms, these chrome things. Mirren was probably wiping the floor with them, soaking the dust with their blood, or whatever they have that passes for blood.
Zarathustra's eye slits were milky pale and backlit by a faint green glow. But Daylight could feel the intensity of his old friend's gaze upon him.
Then the planet dies. Solar storm, gravity anomaly, tachyon event, whatever. Doesn't matter who's winning then. We end up with a mess like this.
Daylight glanced at his overhead again. the only time he had ever seen data footage of a planet as catastrophically mangled and tortured as Adamantua was in feeds of unstable worlds to be avoided as not supportive. 6 weeks earlier, the cream of his chapter, the majority of his kin, the shield core itself, had been down there, dug in, and on a solid footing, burning out the last vestiges of a numerous but outclassed enemy.
"Are you suggesting we turn back and give them up as lost?" he asked. "Of course not."
"Then what?"
"I'm suggesting that we prepare ourselves for the worst," said Zarathustra. "If this mud ball has up and died under Master Mirren and our brothers, then..."
"We will make a great mourning like never before, greater even than we did for our Primarch progenitor," said Daylight simply.
"It would be the worst loss imaginable," agreed Zarathustra, "for the Imperial Fists, the old Seventh, greatest of all the Adeptus Astartes, and the most loyal of all defenders of Terra, to be reduced to nothing but the last 50 Wall Brothers stationed at the palace, to lose all but 5%, to be diminished to a 20th. How would we ever recover from that?"
Daylight had no answer. Zarathustra was right. It was unthinkable. Even a force of transhuman warriors dedicated to dying in the service of the Imperium did not like to consider what might happen if they all died. The gene seed loss alone would be an atrocity. Could they ever rebuild, even turning to successor chapters for support and bloodline? No loyal first founding chapter had ever been entirely swept away, not in the history of the Imperium, not even in the Heresy War. Would the Imperial Fists be the first to pass into legend? Some said, quietly and very informally, that it was inevitable. The Adeptus Astartes were a dying breed. Bloodlines and gene seeds were gradually failing over time. The vigor had waned, and long gone was the time, pre-heresy, when thousands upon thousands of space marines marshalled under the stars. The bitter gall of the heresy had cut them down, halved their legions, decimated the surviving loyalists, and tragically reduced the chapter's ability to produce new space marines in anything like the numbers of old. With the possible exception of the Ultramarines, and even there was the contention that the same plight ultimately afflicted them too, the Adeptus Astartes were diminishing. They were a finite resource, used only for the most elite missions and efforts. They were slowly, very slowly, dying out. Senior men in the chapter predicted that within 400 or 500 years, unless effective new methods of gene seed synthesis could be developed and a new golden age brought about, the space marine would be a thing of myth. In his early life, before the honor of Wall Brother had been granted him, before he had become Daylight had fought the Eldar. In fact, it was his deeds in the face of the Eldar that had led to the Wall Brother honor being bestowed upon him. Daylight had admired the Eldar immensely. They were truly worthy opponents, and he had always thought them sad, tragic, like figures in an ancient play. He had thought about them often as he paced the ritual patrol routes in the cold hallways of Daylight Wall. They were great warriors, the greatest their species could produce, and in their time, in older ages, they had been peerless among the infinite stars. Their time had passed, however, and their glory with it. Their suns were setting, and they were but ghosts of their old selves, unimpeachable warriors with great stories, proud histories, old glories, and fine hearts, who were simply fighting their end-day wars as they waited for extinction to overwhelm them. When Daylight had slain the crest-helmed master of Sathoiwan Craftworld, there had been tears in the alien's eyes, and tears in Daylight's too. When great eras end, all should mark them, even the champions of the next epoch, and no great heroes should ever pass into shadow unmourned. For a long time, Daylight had felt that the Space Marines were facing a similar long decline. They were more like the worthy Eldar than they cared to admit, giants from another age who were simply living out their twilight amongst mortals, incapable of fending off the gathering darkness and unable to recapture their halcyon greatness. Daylight had not expected to see that end approach so fast inside his own lifespan. If the Imperial Fists were as lost as Zarathustra feared, perhaps the age of the Adeptus Astartes was coming to a close faster than anyone imagined. Zarathustra's words had troubled him in another way. He had spoken of the terrain turning against friend and foe alike, of Adamantua and its geological mayhem being the true enemy. That was a bleak prospect. The pride of the Imperial Fists was their ability to defend anywhere from anything. How could they hope to excel if anywhere and everywhere the very ground itself turned on them? The Stormbird bucked again, more violently than ever, more warning lights lit, and a klaxon sounded. The pilot and his co-pilot were too busy controlling the breakneck descent to be able to cancel it this time. The lurching turned into a protracted bout of shuddering vibrations.
"Atmospherics worse than cogitator prediction," said the tech adept, a flutter in his voice. "Crosswinds, also ash in the upper airbands."
"Ash?"
"Volcanic ash, also particulate matter, aerosolized mud, organic residue."
"Hold on!"
the pilot yelled suddenly. The Stormbird started a bank along its center line. The exterior light beaming into the gloom of the cabin through the slit ports began to rapidly creep up the cabin walls, over the ceiling, and back down the other side, illuminating the struggling, desperate faces of the Asmodai troopers behind their visor plates, cheeks and chins tugged by the inverting gravity. The banking turned into a full rotation, then another, and then another, faster. Daylight knew that the humans aboard weren't built to withstand that kind of flight trauma. The Stormbird crew members were modified enough to withstand it with their reinforced bones and muscle sheaths, their inner ears and proprioception senses replaced by augmetics, and their stomachs and regurgitative mechanisms removed and regrafted with fluid ingesters. But the Imperial Guardsmen would be disorientated, panicked, distressed, vomiting inside their helmets, choking.
"Stabilize," Daylight ordered.
"Negative! Negative!" the pilot yelled back. "We've hit some kind of gravitational—"
He didn't finish the word. The turbulence became too great and too noisy for voice contact. The unpredictable gravitational anomalies that plagued Adamantua were regarded as the greatest threat of all, because they couldn't be mapped and thus avoided. And they couldn't be explained. Daylight heard the pilot yell something again. On the ground, a broad plain of mud and boiling pools lay beneath the angry sky. Ragged grasses blew in the hot crosswinds. In the distance, the broken horizon coughed and smoked and spat sparks into the sky. The sky was low, a rotting mass of swirling clouds striped by lightning. The clouds were running swiftly across it like a picked feed playing fast. Far away, six bright raptors punched out of the clouds, diving, catching the sun. They stayed in formation for a second, but they were fluttering, beset by both savage crosswinds and a gravitational pocket that refused to obey the reality around it. One burst into flames, like a flower blooming, scattering its shredded fuselage. A second failed to recover from its dive and plunged like a stone into the distant hills. A third tried to bank, but then spun away like a leaf on the wind, out of sight. The other three stayed true, pulled up, cut low, but their trajectories were not stable either. Gravity stammered again, bubbling the sky and slamming them hard. They fell into darkness and black cloud and were lost.